Keys, Installment 7, Dale J. Stevens and the Uncollege Movement. Critical thinking question. What if you just went up to your parents and said something like, "Hey, from this point forward, I am going to be completely in charge of my own educational experience. I'm going to make my own plans for my educational future, and those plans may involve college, but they may not." How would that go for you? Hi, everybody. This is Brett, and welcome back to School Sucks Podcast. It's January 2012. I'm not sure what day you're going to hear this or what day this is going to be released, so we'll just call it January. It's a month. Anyway, really excited about today's show, the seventh installment in our series called Keys. I should probably start making more of these shows. My guest is going to be Dale J. Stevens, the founder of Uncollege. Before we go any further, let me just tell you a little bit about Dale. Dale Stevens brings a unique perspective on the future of education, talent, and innovation. He is a sought-after speaker and education expert, appearing on major news networks including ABC, TechCrunch, Huffington Post, Chronicle of Higher Education, New York Magazine, Forbes, and National Public Radio. At 19, I'm actually reading this just from a little bio on a TED speech that he gave. He's 20 now. Dale leads Uncollege, a social movement that applies the methods of unschooling, the self-directed brand of homeschooling with which he was raised, to the realm of higher education. He is currently writing a book about the opportunity cost of going to college and how to create your own education from the world. So how about that? Now, I want to be clear. I do not tell people what to do. I do not say you should drop out of school. I do not say you should not go to college. But I do say that you should be in charge of your own educational experience. And that might include finishing high school. It might not. It might include going to college. It might not. In past shows, we've talked a lot about, you know, why people should go to college, what people could use college for, and in some cases, why it might be better to avoid it. So I hope you just keep an open mind. And of course, like I said, so important. Please do everything you can to make sure that your educational experience, whether you're 14, 24, 34, that's how old I am, 54, 104, make sure that experience is a self-directed one. Because this pursuit is lifelong. That's education, you know, self-directed, ongoing. We need to take that word back, because right now a lot of people think education means you go in this crappy concrete building for 12 years and you eat sloppy joes and you climb some ropes and you listen to people in Dockers talk about Gregor Mendel and some other stuff. And those are the good things. So tell your friends, real education is so much more than that. In fact, it's kind of the opposite. So, anyway, enough out of me. I'm going to play you a little clip of one of Dale's TED Talks, and then we'll get right to our discussion. Thank you for listening. Take care.
Now, do you find it any ironic in any way that I'm standing here on a college campus talking about why dropping out of college may be a really good idea? It's really not, because education is changing faster than institutions can. The deal used to be that if you went to college, gave up 4 years of your life, hundreds of thousands of dollars in tuition, debt, and foregone earnings, you'd be set for life with a cushy job and handsome salary. I can tell you that that is no longer the case. Richard Arum, a researcher at NYU, found that 36% of college students, after 4 years of college, showed no improvement at all in critical thinking, complex reasoning, or writing. In the U.S., over 70.1% of high school students go to college, and a college degree has become the new high school diploma. Too often, college promotes conformity, competition, and theory, rather than skills like innovation, collaboration, and application that are requisite for success in the 21st century. If college were teaching the skills required for success in our global entrepreneurial economy, 22.4% of college graduates under 25 wouldn't be unemployed, and another 22% wouldn't be working in jobs that don't require a college degree. When we take on astronomical debt, in the U.S., it's an average of $34,000 per student. Yes, the average college graduate has $34,000 in debt. We're stuck into a very narrow track, forcing to find a job until we pay off that debt. We're mortgaging away our freedom to innovate, create, and change the world in exchange for letters after our name. Contrary to what you might think, I'm really not interested in burning books or raising classrooms or doing away with college as we know it. I simply want to change the notion that going to college is the only path to success. And I want to empower everybody, whether you're in the classroom or in academia or outside of it completely, with the skills, tools, and aptitudes necessary to pursue your passion and change the world, irrespective of the letters after your name.
Oh, and I have to squeeze this in before we go any further. This is kind of a production note, but it's a pretty important one. Dale was in Germany when we were recording this. First of all, we tried Skype, and it was a little crackly at times. So about 10 minutes in, I asked if he could switch to a cell phone. One of the little glitches in Skype is right at the beginning during our greeting when I ask him how he's doing, and he says awesome, but it kind of sounds like awful. Now, I just had a show where we were talking about doublespeak and circumlocution, how people can say these weird things or these confusing things and then distract the listener from hearing things they say in the future or paying attention to things they say in the future. So I just don't want you to be like, while Dale is talking, thinking, why did he say it was awful? And why isn't Brett asking him if there's anything he can do to make him feel better? So he says awesome, just to be clear. So, all right, here is our discussion. Thanks. Very excited to be joined today by Dale J. Stevens, who is the founder of UnCollege. How you doing, Dale?
Awesome. Thank you for having me, Brett.
Oh, my pleasure. So first of all, can you tell us a little bit about UnCollege, what it is, and where this idea came from?
UnCollege is a social movement challenging the notion that college is the only success. The idea came out of my background as an unschooler. I left school in fifth grade, skipped middle school and high school entirely, and instead went out and mentors, built businesses, did internships, lived in France. Yep, still went to college because that's what society expects you to do after high school. And at college, I was frustrated having been thrown back into an environment where I was listening to lectures about medieval history on Tahitian islands when I could have been out doing things in the real world. The idea came about from a conversation with my friend Rebecca Goldman, who had also been unschooled and had been at school at Dartmouth. And we got to talking, and for much of my fall semester, I thought that my frustrations with college were due to the fact that I'd chosen to go to a small, private, unknown institution instead of going to an elite school. And through talking with Rebecca, we found that we had precisely the same frustrations, observed the same gap between theory and practice, were surrounded by people who were more interested in writing papers than changing the world, and decided that because of our common backgrounds as unschoolers, that the root of our frustrations must be systemic.
So, I mean, as far as your experience, I've talked a lot about unschooling on the show in the past, but I saw a talk that you did, a TED talk that you did, and your feelings about primary school were it's a great place to learn how to put up with a miserable environment, basically.
Yep.
Once you were free of that, when you reached like the middle school and the high school years, obviously your education, I mean, actually, I don't consider institutionalized schooling like real education. Like I've said so many times on my show in the past that it's more of a, you know, intrinsically driven lifelong experience than just, you know, being forced through these routines and forced into these rooms and into these desks and writing papers and filling out worksheets. And when you have this experience as an unschooler, what is the contrast when you get to college? Because most people think about, you know, everything you've done before you get to college is about getting to college, and that's where the real education that's going to make you successful in life begins. But what did you find? Like, what was the contrast between your experience as an unschooler and getting to, you know, an institution as far as, like, what was being taught?
And looking back, it seems antithetical that homeschooling or unschooling just should serve as backdoor to getting into college. And I recall in middle school and high school justifying my homeschooling or unschooling by saying, oh, well, homeschoolers and unschoolers go to Harvard. It's okay. And what I've come to realize is that it's a lifelong and life-wide commitment to forging your own path and not sticking with the system. When I was unschooling, I had so much more intellectual freedom to learn how, where, when, and why I wanted. At college, everything was set into a very specific routine. Mm-hmm. And my professors weren't very content when I liked to sway from that routine. And I'm someone who likes to challenge authority, who, when in an academic environment, will actively challenge and call out professors and students when they're wrong or when I disagree with them. And that wasn't always appreciated. I had a professor of history tell me to stop asking so many questions at college, which seems completely antithetical to what learning is supposed to be about.
I have definitely had that experience. I talked with some kids. I went down and spoke at UConn a little over a year ago, and we talked about how welcomed questions are by, you know, these professors, especially in areas like history or political science, who they've written a book, and you're just some 18-year-old kid, so who are you to question them? I think that's pretty common. And I've also seen studies that say that the traits that are most often associated with creativity, this is more in secondary school, are the traits that teachers find most annoying in students. And I'll put a link in my show notes to that study so you can check it out and the audience can check it out. But yeah, I've seen a lot of that it's not a place where that sort of individuality or curiosity or creativity is really invited at all.
I mean, I study a couple of weeks ago, and it's one of those studies where you have to think they needed a study to prove this. I mean, just think about, would you like to have Einstein in your class?
Oh, yeah.
Probably not.
To move to the UnCollege itself, are you encouraging people not to go to college entirely or even drop out of college? And I'm asking that question maybe a little bit in that incredulous voice that I think whenever you do something that goes against the grains of, institutions and ideas that have just been tacitly accepted for so long, where people just don't really think about why they do these things critically. They say, well, are you suggesting people don't go to college? Is that what the mission is of UnSchool, UnCollege?
The mission of is to empower people to hack their education, to take it into their own hands. And that can mean dropping out. But it doesn't have to. I mean, I think colleges can be a valuable place, but only if you use them on your authority. If you are using the resources of laboratories or professors' time or library when you want to, not because you have to. And there, I think if I had more patience, I probably could have gone through the system and hacked my way to a degree. But mm-hmm. I'm an impatient person, and I preferred to go ahead and forge my own path instead of trying to make a system work to an unideal environment.
So you were in college in Arkansas, is that correct?
That's correct. The college I attended for 7 months was Hendricks College.
And what were you trying to do while you were there?
I was taking general education courses because Hendricks, as a liberal arts college, has a pretty stringent distribution requirement system. And while I was there, I tried to run for student government and was not elected because I was serious about it. I tried to start a career peer mentoring program, which didn't really work. Career services didn't like me telling them that they weren't doing their job very well. But the issue was that the school was just too small for me to successfully be able to hack the system. Hendricks has 1,400 students, and while there are nice people there, I just come off of 9 months of living and working in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And there just aren't the resources in terms of money, in terms of people, in terms of just population. The entire state of Arkansas is 2 million people, I believe, whereas the Bay Area has nearly 10.
Sure.
And the types of people that I had access to in San Francisco were just unparalleled to what I found in Arkansas.
Yeah, it seems like the college is this bubble that's protecting people or not letting them get out into the real world and see what's actually there. And it's kind of also run by these people who went to 12 years of school and then another 6 to 8 years of college and then went right back into academia and have often very little real world experience themselves. So a lot of times, and a lot of people who listen to my show told me this, that when they get out of that environment and they're, you know, they're finally expected to be an adult at age 23, 24, they're shocked by what they find.
I'm always surprised when the argument back to me that, well, college is a good place. It's a sandbox. You don't have responsibilities. You're able to try things out. And I find it hard to, on how you're supposed to grow up, quote unquote, become an adult in an environment where other people are paying your bills, cooking your meals, cleaning your bathrooms, and your actual level of responsibility is zero.
Another thing I wanted to talk about too, the numbers. When you put this idea forward, people say, well, give me some statistics, you know, like why would you want to raise awareness about the opportunity cost of college? So what do people ask you for the numbers? And if so, what do you tell them?
You have to look at the sheer cost of going to college these days. The average student graduates with $27,000 in debt. And aside from the time that's spent in college, usually 4 years in the U.S., the problem with taking on $27,000 in debt is you into a very narrow path. Because after you graduate, you're forced to take a job that you potentially don't want or is unsatisfying in order to pay off that debt. And it's sad that we aren't allowing young people the opportunity to forge their own path, to follow their passions, to do what they care about, what they love with their lives. And it's certainly hard to quantify the success of dropouts, right? It's easy to point to people who are outliers, the Mark Zuckerbergs and Steve Jobs and Bill Gates of the world. But that ultimately really isn't very helpful. And what I set out to do with my book is find, interview, and talk to people who have found success in non-traditional ways, but are not the outliers, who are leading successful lives, but have defined success for themselves.
Yeah, I think that that's an important question too. It's a word that's thrown around a lot, especially like I've done college consulting in the past, and this is a word that is, you know, rolling off the tongues of students and parents and teachers and guidance counselors and people like me, college consultants and tutors, and it's never defined. You know what I mean? And this is a word that could mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. So can we, I mean, it's hard for me to ask you define success, but I think it's important to point out that success is, you know, I mean, obviously you don't want to set a very, very low bar, but success is something malleable as far as the definition is concerned, down to an individual level. Do you agree?
Absolutely. It has to be, you have to define success for yourself in order to achieve it. For me, I define success in terms of the impact that I have on other people. And the sheer volume of emails that I get from people every day who have resonance in something that I've done or something that I've said or written or talked about or an interview that they've read about me is validating and tells me that I'm doing the right thing and that this is the part of my life, at least right now, where I can have the most impact.
Yeah, I think in the video, too, you discussed three paths that people think are the only options that they have. The first one is McDonald's career, fast food career, and that's for the high school dropouts. Well, you know, you can finish high school or you can work at McDonald's or, you know, be on the street, that kind of a thing. And then there's the sort of middle, which is just like what you should settle for, you know, trudge your way through college and then trudge your way through a career that pays the bills sitting in a cubicle. And then there's the sort of unattainable, the stratosphere of, you know, Mark Zuckerberg, Steve Jobs, and like it's only those three things and there's nothing else. And you talk about, in the TED Talk anyway, a fourth option.
That fourth option is forging your own path.
Yeah.
And what I've found is people who are doing exactly that in all levels of society, doing from all types of backgrounds, who have found success without formal education. And they're everything from filmmakers to vice presidents at Visa to IT consultants to founders of companies. And it goes to show that finding success without a college degree is not relegated to people who are special or geniuses or outliers in some way.
Right. And I think there's lots of people who have these exciting, ambitious ideas, but they never do anything. Why do you think that is?
I think it's because they don't have permission. They just don't know it's an option. And when you're brought up in a school system that tells you what to read and what to do and what your homework assignment is, and that there's only one answer at the back of the book, it's really hard to know that you can act with your own agency.
And one of the things that I think is really important, too, is like I talk a lot on my show about problems. And I think before you can start to, pardon the expression, but before you can reach for the stars, you have to kind of realize the hole that you're in. As far as for most people, we're talking about over 90%, probably over 95% of people who are in this country, and this is probably true around the world, too, spend something like a decade, if not more, in institutionalized schooling, which is not about individuality, which is not about creativity, which is not about complex reasoning or critical thinking. And then when they're released into the world, I think it's important that they understand the handicap. I mean, that is such an affront to the natural talents of a human being. Those qualities that we evidence when we're so little, and then we go into institutionalized schooling, and by the time we're 18, many of those things, the optimism, the uniqueness, the curiosity, the creativity, for a lot of people seem to be in a sort of deep remission. So I'd like to point out these things that are wrong, but one thing that I don't want to do is leave people with the idea that, oh, it's okay if you can't be successful and happy because, you know, you're a victim of institutions. You know, you're a victim of a cruel world. And I don't know if you've ever had to deal with that or talk or counsel with people about that. But I think it's an important thing to point out that this is not an invitation to just throw up your hands and say, how could anybody be successful in a world like this?
I think it's also really important to point out that talking about success outside of institutions does not mean that that it's unattainable or that we're judging people who are in the school.
Mm-hmm.
It was really difficult when I was leading Hendrix because everyone felt like my frustrations with school were a direct value judgment upon their choice to stay in school. And I got some really, really nasty emails from people. Some of which were actually really quite amusing. One student sent me an email that ended with the line, "Don't give up on the opportunity you've been given, Dale. Bloom where you're planted and be patient with the occasional tedium of personal development. I know it more than you think. My brother dropped out of university. He still lives at home and works as a cook in a restaurant." And this individual just took ridiculously personal offense to the fact that I had chosen to leave Hendrix. And I wrote him back and pointed out that what if his brother likes living at home and working as a chef in a restaurant? That might well be success for him.
Mm-hmm.
And the attitude of accepting where you're planted is just not one that I subscribe to.
Right.
I wrote him back and said that I'm going to choose where I'm planted, and I'm going to enjoy the roller coaster of personal development. Life doesn't have to be boring or tedious. It can be fun.
Well,
the same goes for school.
Yeah, yeah. Well, for education, I think definitely. Most people, when things are chosen by us voluntarily, those are always the things in life that we enjoy, that we look forward to, that we're excited about. And when things are imposed upon us, and people see college, I think, in many respects, and I know there's people who go to college because they say, I want to study this, or I'm interested in this, and I teach SAT classes, so one of the first things I ask at the beginning of a class is, what do you want to do? Where do you want to go? Those kinds of questions, and you know, it's maybe 1 in 5 that have some kind of clear plan for what should happen after high school, but for the most part, it's, well, I'm going to go to the 13th grade like I'm supposed to. In other words, it's not a voluntary thing. And it's hard for me in what I do to suggest this as an option. I think that I would obviously, I couldn't do college consulting anymore because, you know, if somebody is 17 or 18 years old and they have no idea what they want to do, I don't think it's like a good idea to start $100,000 in the hole with maybe no better idea of what you want to do. Yeah, I find that a lot of people are kind of in this passive consumer mode where they're expecting college to give them something.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is, when students become consumers, they start to expect certain things from schools, right? Mm-hmm. And that's when administrators start building nice, fancy new gymnasiums and beautiful dormitories instead of actually investing in the academic experience.
So you're experiencing this kind of pushback from people. There is a lot, people take this personally because whenever you are, a person comes along and says, you know, I'm going against the grain or I'm thinking about things differently, it really is often confronting for people to say, I think often the sentiment is like, well, why am I doing this? Or why has this never occurred to me? But the way that manifests, you know, in their interaction with you is kind of like an attack. I think I've felt that way a lot about many of the things that I've put out there. But I wonder, because you're a young man, there's a couple of challenges that I've gotten. And I'm interested if you've ever heard these, and if so, how you responded to them. The first one is, how old are you?
I am 20. And I've faced a lot more ageism in my time than I ever have faced adversity for not having a traditional degree. I started doing things in my community when I was 13 or 14 and ended up talking my way onto a board for a steering committee that was building a library that was a joint use project between the city, the county, and the school district. And easily and often dismissed for my age. And I think it's really unfortunate that a simple number is used for judgment upon individuals. Oftentimes I feel as though youth empowerment and youth rights is sometimes the issue that needs fighting for the most, which is, in fact, an integral part, I feel, of education reform.
So when, I mean, like I said, I have a young audience, mostly people under 30. That's a majority of the people who listen to this show. When they present their ideas, when they present their ambitions, from your experience, because like at 20 years old, you've been out of school and kind of mixing in this adult world for a long time. And like you said, you've encountered this ageism. What would you say to them as far as like how they can respond? Because they are going to encounter, I mean, I'm 34, and when I meet a new person and tell them some of my ideas, I'm still being asked that question.
It requires a high level of self-confidence. And the downside of this is that it can often be interpreted as arrogant. Mm-hmm. But that's a risk that you have to take. And I think that, in fact, in order to believe that your ideas are as important as a 50-year-old with two PhDs who's worked at Harvard for 40 years, you have to be a bit arrogant. But ultimately what it requires is a sense of equality. And that's a belief in the quality of your ideas, the belief in how you, in the quality of how you communicate. I have always refused to use titles before people's names.
Mm-hmm.
And was called out a lot for this in Arkansas. In Arkansas, people are pretty traditional and like reserved ma'am and sir and doctor,
sure,
which I flatly refused to do. I called them by their first names, and they called me by my first name. And for me, it's not a sign of disrespect. It's a question of mutual respect.
Right. That's, you know, that's the first challenge, the ageism challenge. How old are you? Which isn't even a question. It's kind of this assertion in the form of a question that, hey, kid, you're a lot younger than me. And I'm older, and therefore that automatically makes me wiser. Of course, it's always, like people should know, for thousands of years, it's always been young people who've put forth the ideas that changed the world and, you know, social ethical movements that pushed humanity forward. It was never people who said, well, once I retire, I'm going to get something like that going. So that's the first one. The second challenge that I've encountered a lot, and I think this is comes from challenging or questioning institutions and ideas, which most people have just sort of acquiesced to. And, you know, this is especially true with previous generations who've just kind of accepted these things without questions. When you talk about something as sacred as college, the way you do, and explaining the opportunity cost of it, and I've done this with plenty of things as well, you know, like challenging traditions. And I used to, when I was a teacher, kids would ask me, like, why do we do this or why do we do that, these traditions? And, you know, this is somewhat of a cynical and acerbic response, but I would say, well, you know, most traditions were things that were thought up when people knew a lot less than we do now, and they'll continue probably until somebody starts to think about why we do them. Like, we all know now that when somebody sneezes, it's not the expulsion of evil spirits from their bodies, but we still bless them as if it was. When you do this, when you present these challenges to these well-established institutions, these sacred cows, people say, well, you're just against stuff. You know, like, where's the solution? People, it seems they want people with new ideas to talk to them like politicians. Like, oh, don't worry, I have a 14-point plan. I know how to solve things. I know what to do. And you can't excuse yourself from this continuous affirmation of the status quo unless you have a fully formed plan about some better idea. So have you ever encountered that? Well, you're just against stuff. You know, you're just negative.
I find that more from students than from institutions. Surprisingly, I found that people who work at institutions of both administrators and professors are quite receptive to my ideas because they're the people who know and understand the most what's wrong with the system, and they're genuinely interested in changing it.
That's interesting. And these are – go ahead.
These are people who are administrators and professors at some of the biggest schools in the country, from Stanford to Princeton to Harvard, as well as small institutions.
Are you getting invited to schools to speak, by the way?
I've spoken at Stanford a few times and have been invited to a couple other institutions this spring. None of them are confirmed quite yet, though.
That's interesting.
But I mean, I've also been at institutions that are still institutions but not schools, like the New York Times, for example. I've been at International Economic Forum. There seems a level of concern about what to do with education as we go forward. And you're right, people tend to want specific plans, a solution, as it were. And I think the root of unschooling and uncollege and the philosophy of self-directed learning is that there's not a single solution. The point is that the solution is franchise, that people are empowered to make their own decisions, to form their own solution by taking bits and pieces of existing systems and creating new systems to create a personalized education.
When we talk about this stuff, it seems so obvious. And one of the things that I've been called on my show before is I tend to be pretty hard on previous generations. Have you ever, when you talk to young people, or maybe even experienced this yourself, have you ever encountered any resentment, I guess was probably the best word, towards these previous generations who led us to this place that we are today? I think that's relatively common, that, you know, you realize these things and you say, why has nobody else been questioning all of this?
There's certainly sometimes a challenge from previous generations of why I'm questioning institutions.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel more often that the previous generations raises, well, why didn't we challenge that? And perhaps that's just because the people I tend to hang out with are people who have stayed revolutionaries even past their 20s and 30s.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is a totally personal bias on my side. But people think about education itself in terms of as if people were being hazed for a fraternity. They say, oh, well, I had to slog through it, therefore you should too, which is about the faultiest logic in the world.
Yeah, it was good enough for me, and I think that that's one of the things that's just kind of dragging or slowing the progress of society. When we look at how children are raised, how children are educated, how children are treated and regarded in society, if you have somebody that, you know, grew up in the 50s and they were threatened by like belts and closets and their idea is that was good enough for me, that's really kind of a drag on progress. You know what I mean? And I think that that's very common, that these things were good enough for me. And I'll be damned if I'm going to look back at some of the things that happened to me with a critical eye to say that was wrong or people could have done better. I'm just going to, you know, be comfortable with what happened to me and say that that's good enough for everybody else. You're right. That is completely faulty logic. As far as a more practical approach to some of this stuff, you went through this process. Was this a tough sell? Probably not for your parents if you had been unschooled, right, as far as getting out of college?
For me, the process of leaving college was more or less simply a question of evaluating the opportunity cost of going. Mm-hmm. And in February and March, college got a lot of press attention. And in March, I spent a lot of time away from this college. I went to New York to meet some editors. I went to South by Southwest for a week. And when I got back, I really had missed enough school that I couldn't even have finished the year if I wanted to. So I failed my classes, filed my resignation forms, and left at the beginning of March. My parents weren't particularly surprised. I mean, they knew that I had been gone, and they knew that about my frustration with college. I still think that my parents were certainly a little bit concerned because I didn't know exactly what I was doing when I left. I mean, I had a couple of job offers, and I had a way to support myself, but nothing was set in stone. So even had I graduated from college, certainly still not certain that I would have had a way to support myself. It's amazing these days to think that people are graduating from school without sure ways to earn a living, even though that's what they've been promised.
And the last thing, I know you have to go in a couple of minutes, the last question I have is, surely young people have probably asked you something similar to this, but like, how do people approach their parents? What should they say? Because I think about my experience as a college consultant and this idea of not going to college. I mean, that's the same thing, I think, in a lot of parents' minds as dropping out of high school. So is there any strategy that you've discussed with students about the most peaceful and productive way to approach this with parents?
The people that have had the most success tend to be people who go about it rationally, who've showed to their parents that that they have a clear plan for what they're going to do instead, that what they're going to do is equally or more valuable than what they would have done in a traditional institution. But they don't require their parents' validation. It's not asking their parents' permission, it's informing their parents as to their decision.
Right.
I was talking to someone earlier today who left when he was when he was 13, and I asked him how he went about getting permission, and he said, "Well, he didn't. He just sent the school a letter that he was going to leave himself, and didn't ask his parents at all."
And I'm really excited that this is out there. Hopefully more young people can find it. And at least, you know, even if they still make the decision to go to college, which you have said you're not entirely against, they understand that their options, their range of options is far more broad than they originally believed it to be, than what's presented to them at the end of high school and the whole college admissions process. And even in college itself, as far as like what's the next step after that, like to see that people can define success in their own way and choose their own path. I really appreciate that you're doing this. What can people, my audience, do to help you out?
If you want to learn more, go to uncollege.org. You can join our email list. We'll be announcing plans for an uncollege fellowship of sorts coming up that'll happen after the book launch. So if you sign up, subscribe to the blog, like our page on Facebook, you can know about that as soon as details are released.
Excellent. So I really appreciate you joining me today from Germany, correct?
Correct. I am in Berlin right now, finishing off my book.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, I certainly hope we can talk more in the future. I would be happy to have you on down the road somewhere, and we can talk about progress, the book, when it comes out. Thanks again, Dale. I really appreciate you doing this.
You are most welcome. Have an awesome afternoon.